You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Friday, so first of all, later on in the program, Stephen Stills is going to drop by. Senator Sherrod Brown is going to say hi. Stephanie Cutter is going to drop by. But first, of course, it being Friday, it is Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And, Senator, welcome. No? Yes? Oh, he lost his headphones. Oh, he's on the telephone. No?
Hello.
Bernie? Hey, Bernie.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Great. And great to have you with us. I just, but by the way, people can call in with, after our brief conversation here. You'll be taking calls in our national town hall meeting, 866-987-THOM. So, Senator, your thoughts on where we are at this moment in time, just a few days out from the election.
Well, you know, Tom, it is a remarkable and hugely important moment in American history, and what we'll be voting on next Tuesday will determine to a significant degree the future of this country. And, you know, what I always get very upset about is media coverage of campaigns, and especially this campaign, where it is regarded as nothing more than a sporting event, who's winning and who's losing, and what do you have to do to win Ohio, when in fact we have to take a hard look at the policies being advocated by Republicans and Democrats, by Romney and Obama. And I think if we do that, and we just spend a few minutes thinking about what's happening in this country, where we have to go, the degree to which Romney's policies really are very similar to what George W. Bush's policies were, which to a significant degree got us into this mess in the first place, I think most people will conclude that, you know, we've got to move forward with Obama, and we've got to do everything we can to strengthen Obama in fighting for working families. But going back to the Bush policies of more tax breaks for the wealthiest people in this country, when we already have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth, and that inequality is getting worse, the idea that you want to go forward with more deregulation of Wall Street, when in fact that is exactly what allowed Wall Street to engage in incredibly reckless and greedy and illegal behavior, which drove us into this recession. The idea that you want to greatly expand unfettered free trade when we have lost 55,000 factories in the last 10 years and millions of decent paying jobs. So, to my mind, what we are seeing, especially as a result of this horrendous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, is billionaires, and there are really dozens of billionaires out there, the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, and many, many others, who are pouring huge sums of money into the Obama campaign, into campaigns all over this country, to make sure that the wealthiest people continue to do even better, while they step all over working families and elderly people and children and the sick. And I think we've got to say no, that that is just not acceptable in this country. I get also very, you know, disturbed by the fact that having all of us have seen what Hurricane Sandy has done to New Jersey, New York, and understand that virtually the entire scientific an agreement that global warming is real. Global warming is substantially caused by human activity.
Mm-hmm.
And global warming is causing devastating problems for the United States and for the world. And that you have Republicans out there who are talking about...
We can hear you fine, Bernie.
Okay. Who are talking about global warming as a non-issue. I don't know how often Romney even mentions the issue. And I can tell you that my colleague on the Environmental Committee, Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma, if the Republicans gain control over the United States Senate, Inhofe will be chairman of the Environmental Committee. And Jim Inhofe has been very clear. He believes global warming is a hoax. And many other Republicans share that view. Is that really the direction we want to go in this country when the scientific community believes the very opposite of that? Mm-hmm. In terms of women's rights, I find it very, very disturbing. After all of the struggles for decades and decades and decades, the fight for women women's rights in the economy. The fight for women to control their own bodies are under fierce assault right now from right-wing Republicans. So I think when you add all of this stuff up together, what you find is that you Republican Party, which has moved very, very far to the right, which is dominated by very, very wealthy people, relatively small number of billionaires, whose social policies are extremely reactionary. And I don't think as a nation that that is the direction in which we want to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious about your thoughts. Can you hear me, Senator? We're having a little technical snafu here.
I'm having an echo on my end, Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. That makes it difficult to talk. I know. We will fix this during the break in 4 minutes. I think we'll just go back to using the telephone. But I'm curious your thoughts about Romney's closing argument, which he's making right now, which is basically elect me or the Republicans in the House of Representatives will kneecap the country.
I think that's an outrageous argument. Essentially, what he is saying is that we're going to reward right-wing extremism. We're going to say to these people who have participated in a level of obstructionism which is unprecedented in the modern history of this country, that thank you for all that you've done in trying to prevent us from passing any significant legislation. And because you've been so adamant, you've been so obstructionism, that we are going to reward you. And yes, we shouldn't elect Obama, because we know that you guys will continue to filibuster and prevent any serious legislation from being passed. I think that's an outrageous argument. In this country, we do not reward obstructionism and extremism and say, we surrender. You guys win. And we're going to cave in and give you what you want. I don't think that's appropriate, and I don't think that's what the American people want. So the answer is no. We're not going to cut Social Security. We're not going to cut Medicare and Medicaid. We're not going to give more tax breaks to the rich and run up the deficit, because that is what billionaires and right-wing extremists want. Yeah. So I think that argument is just a horrendous argument. It really says to somebody who holds a gun to your head, okay, you got it, we're surrendering, and you have the country. What we must demand is that the United States Congress start listening to the American people, who have been very, very clear in demanding that Congress represent the middle class, working families, and stop bowing down day after day to the needs of millionaires and billionaires.
Okay. Bernie, by the way, if you want to just pick up your phone and talk to us in the minute we have left here, it may be a little less stressful for everybody. I just got the phone up and you're on. Can you hear me on the phone now?
I can hear you on the phone, yeah.
Okay, great. The last minute here before the break, get out the vote.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we have also seen in this campaign is not only the horrendous role that Citizens United is playing in allowing billionaires to make huge contributions into the political process and buy and sell politicians, we've also seen a massive amount of voter suppression efforts on the part of Republicans. So their idea of democracy is to allow billionaires to buy elections and then do everything you can to prevent elderly people, working people, poor people from participating. The antidote to that, obviously, is a huge voter turnout. And I hope very much that all over this country, in Vermont and throughout America, people are going to say, yeah, we do understand that this election is enormously important, that it's vital not only for us but for our kids and our grandchildren. We are going to vote, and we are not going to accept right-wing extremism.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it could affect the Supreme Court in ways that will affect generations.
Absolutely.
As well. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be back with your questions for Senator Sanders right after this. Stick around here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. You can check out ours at tomhartman.com. And 866-987-THOM, our telephone number for your calls for Bernie right after this.
Let me urge every American citizen, man and woman, to use your sacred privilege of voting. You here at home have the freedom of the ballot, irrespective of party. You should register and vote this November. I think that is a matter of plain good citizenship.
plain good citizenship. Welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. And Bernie, it just we've been having some technical problems on the audio here, and it just occurred to me, if we drew a straight line from here in Washington, D.C. to your office in Burlington, Vermont, it goes right through New York, which is probably where a lot of the telephone switching stations are. That may have something to do with it, so we'll just use the old-fashioned phone line.
Let me just pick up on the point that Roosevelt just made in that clip.
Sir.
And that is, I know that there are a lot of people who are unhappy with what's going on politically in this country. But I will tell you this. In Washington, D.C., you have a small number of lobbyists who have paid huge amounts of money to represent multinational corporations. Trust me, they are heavily involved in the political process. They not only vote, they not only contribute very heavily into political campaigns, they are there every day watching every word on every piece of legislation to make sure that the rich get richer while the middle class continues to hurt. So if anybody out there says, well, you know, I'm not all that happy with Obama, you should have done more. Well, you know, I share some of those concerns. But you believe me, I do not think you want to see, you want to sit home and not vote and allow a Romney to become president of the United States and pass policies which will be devastating, devastating. Remember, Romney is a candidate who supports the Ryan budget, the Republican budget. That means lowering tax rates for the wealthiest people in this country, giving them huge tax breaks, making major cuts in Medicaid, education, transforming Medicare from the system it is into a voucher program. So if you're happy with that, then you stay home and don't vote. But I suspect most Americans are not, and I would urge you to come out and get involved.
Michelle in Denver, Colorado, listening on AM 760. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Hi, Tom. I have a brief comment and a question. The Republicans are so good at framing the issues to benefit the wealthy. Why, I think Democrats should frame the issue of Medicare for All, make the case of Medicare for All as a significant deficit reduction instead of talking about cutting benefits, which some of them are talking about doing now. But my question is, how can we get to ranked voting or instant runoff voting to expand the process?
Well, Michelle, good questions. I hope, in terms of health care, everybody who's listening understands a couple of points. Number one, the United States is the only country in the industrialized world not to guarantee health care to all people. Tom, I don't know if you recall in that infamous video where Romney was speaking to his millionaire friends behind closed doors, he said something like, you know, some of these people think health care is a right. They're entitled to health care. You remember that?
Right.
Well, count me in as one who is one of those people. Yep. I do believe that health care is a right, and I want to see the United States join the rest of the industrialized world in that pursuit. And I think that's the point that Michelle is making, that if we pass a Medicare for All single-payer program, we will guarantee health care to all people. Second point in terms of health care, everybody has got to understand that in America today, we are spending almost twice as much per person on health care as do the people of any other nation, and many of our outcomes are not as good, among other things. Longevity, how long we live, is way, way behind many other countries. So we spend a lot. We don't get a whole lot of value for what we're spending. Healthcare should be a right, and I hope we can move in that direction. What was the other part of Michelle's?
I don't recall. I'm sorry.
I apologize to you.
Oh, she was talking about the multi-party instant runoff voting.
Oh, right, right.
Thank you, Shane.
I think clearly in any and every way to advance democracy and citizen input and the impact that people can have on elections, A, we have to make it easier for people to vote. Our Republican friends want to make it harder. We should make it easier. I have supported in the past, for example, the idea of making Election Day a holiday. I mean, one of the problems you have with early voting makes it easier is there are some people get home from work 5, 6 o'clock, and, you know, they're eating dinner or traffic is bad, and they just don't go out and vote. I think democracy is so important for America that we deserve a day to celebrate it, to stay home and to think about it and to come out and vote at our leisure. In Vermont, we have experimented with the idea of being able to vote in a way that you don't have to vote for somebody you believe is the lesser of two evils. And I think we want to look at that as well.
There you go. Tim, in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Yeah, how you doing? Question for Bernie. I also agree that I believe that health care should be a right, and American public need to stop letting the billionaires trick them, think that something socialistic, something communistic about, you know, having health care. And also, how in the world did Ronnie's tax issue become a non-issue?
Mm-hmm.
And when did that happen?
Well, Kim, thanks for the call. Again, one of the things that distresses me is many folks in America don't know a whole lot about what's happening around the rest of the world. Every year, a bunch of young people from the United Kingdom come to my office, and it's a teacher that brings them over every year, different kids. And we sit and talk. And for these kids, health care, it's hard for them to imagine that people do not have health insurance. Everybody in the UK has health insurance. Everybody in Australia has health insurance. Everybody in Canada, in Germany, in Finland. We are the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people. We have 50 million people who have no health care at all, and some 45,000 die every single year as a result. So what we have got to understand is what goes on in this country in terms of health care is not normal. We are way, way out and way behind much of the rest of the country. In terms of Romney's tax issue, well, I think what we've learned a lot. And what we have learned is because of the regressive nature of our tax system, you can have people who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars who pay an effective tax rate that is lower than what a police officer, a teacher, or a fireman makes. I think that is pretty absurd.
Amen.
And I think that is also contributing to the deficit we have, and it's something that has to be changed.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us right back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's Brunch with Bernie, our national town hall meeting with a man I think of as America's Senator, Senator Bernie Sanders. Check out sanders.senate.gov and tomhartman.com.
We'll have health care all his days. Go to college, plan a family, make his country proud always. It's a long, hard road with a long, steep climb and a heavy load for a long, long time. And I'm in.
I'm in, too. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. It is our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. You're still here with us, Bernie?
I am right here.
Okay, great. Daniel, in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, what an honor. You're the best. Don't let anybody ever tell you any different. Thank you so much for being such a great light in the midst of such great darkness.
Thank you very much.
I just had a question. I'm a protectionist. I'm against NAFTA. I'm against PNTR with China. And I believe we should trade with other countries that share our values and our economic values and cultural values. It seems to me that it's almost like to call yourself a protectionist is like being blacklisted, like there's something wrong in holding other nations accountable with the same rules we impose on our domestic manufacturers. Am I imagining something, or do you think that that's true?
No, I think you're right. Daniel, this is what happened. I was in the House when a lot of this thing took place with NAFTA. What you had is corporate America selling the Congress and then President Clinton what I consider to be a real just dishonest presentation. And the theory was that if you have unfettered free trade, somehow or another, the United States is going to be producing all of these goods and products that we're going to be selling to other countries around the world. I never believed a word of that, and most Americans didn't, because they understood that where you have countries that are paying workers pennies an hour, obviously what companies will do is shut down in America. Why, if you're General Electric, why do you want to pay workers 20, 25 bucks an hour in America, deal with unions, protect environmental standards, when you can go to China and other low-wage countries and not have to deal with any of that stuff, then you bring your product back into this country tariff-free. So it was a real bill of goods that they sold the Congress. I voted against that stuff. And I think right now, understanding that we, as I mentioned earlier, have lost over 50,000 factories in the last 10 years, millions of good-paying jobs, seen wages go down for whole lots of workers, we have got to rethink our trade policies. Now, trade is a good thing. It's a good thing when it benefits American workers, when it benefits workers in other countries. It is not a good thing when we lose decent paying jobs, when we're in a race to the bottom, when wages go down, and the only people who benefit are the large corporations and the CEOs. So we can and should develop a trade policy which does not force American workers to compete against people who have a very, very low standard of living. That's not free trade. That is just grossly unfair trade for American workers. Our demand must be that corporate America reinvest in this country and that the trade policies we establish benefit working people, people who work in those manufacturing plants and not just the CEOs.
Lurline, am I saying that right, in Morrison, Florida?
Yes.
You are on
the air. I have a question, and Senator Sanders, you're my, you're an outstanding American.
Thank you very much.
I want to find out, does President Obama have the authority to issue a presidential order to set up work programs like we had back during the Depression?
No, because those would, you can't do it by executive order, but what you can do is by legislation. And in my view, that is exactly what we should be doing. There is a lot of discussion, appropriately enough, about the deficit. That's an issue we have got to deal with. There is not enough discussion about the fact that we have 23 million Americans who are unemployed today. And it is absolutely imperative for those people, for our economy, and by the way, for the deficit, because when you put people to work, they're paying taxes and helping us deal with the deficit. Not enough discussion about the need for a massive jobs program. And let me just suggest to you two ways that I think we should and could go forward. Number one is I think almost every American who drives a car understands our infrastructure, roads, bridges are in massive disrepair. Our rail system way behind Europe, Japan, China. Wastewater plants, water systems having serious problems all over America. We can put millions of people back to work rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. And when you do that, you make this country more productive and more internationally competitive. Second of all, despite what Rush Limbaugh and some of our Republican friends believe, global warming is real. It is very likely that this terrible hurricane, Sandy, is a product of global warming. And if we don't want to see more and more of these severe weather disturbances, we've got to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel, to energy efficiency, to sustainable energy. And when you do that, you can create a whole lot of decent-paying jobs. So to answer your question, I do believe we need a massive jobs program to put people back to work, and God only knows there is enough work to do in terms of rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure and transforming our energy system.
Dirk in Fort Worth, Texas. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you. First of all, I just want to say thank you, Senator, for all the hard work you do. I'm a conservative calling in, and I heard your comment about how we're behind the UK and Australia in terms of health care. I've got a friend, well, I've got lots of friends in the UK, and this one particular friend of mine told me a story where she woke up with a swollen foot one day, went in, tried to get see a doctor. She was put on a waiting list because it wasn't an emergency, and so 3 weeks later she goes in. They misdiagnose her, say it was a pain nerve or something like that. Gets put on another waiting list when the problem doesn't go away, and it turns out she's got a broken foot. All this takes place over 3 months, and you know she can't get it fixed, and now she still has problems with the foot because it wasn't treated in a prompt manner. Now, as a conservative, and you know, so far I'm anti-Obamacare. I'm wondering how it's going to be different here in the States.
Okay, Dirk, stay on the line with me for a minute, okay? You there, Dirk?
Yes, correct.
Okay, good. Stay on the line with me. You know, all over the world, you know, people live in systems that have health care. We have, in every country on the world, if your friend is telling you the truth, that's unfortunate. I'm sure that in the UK and I'm sure that in Germany, they have problems with their health care system. But let me tell you this, Dirk. In America today, we are losing about 45,000 people every single year who die because they don't have health insurance, and by the time they get to the doctor, it's too late. in UK, and I happen to know this because my brother lives in the UK, and I meet kids from the UK, you're just welcome to the doctor whenever you want. Now, I'm not going to tell you that every doctor and every treatment in the UK is perfect. Of course it's not, nor is it in America. But the question you have got to ask yourself is, there, is it a good thing that we are the only country in the world that doesn't guarantee health care to all of its people, that our health care outcomes, you mentioned a misdiagnosis in the UK. Well, you know, I can tell you that we lose a significant number of people because they have infections, die of infections. I think the number is 100,000 from hospitals in the United States of America. Every country has its problems. But to my mind, I think we have got to look at health care as a right and figure how we do it cost effectively. How do you provide health care to all people in the most cost effective way? What role do private insurance companies play? Dirk, do you really think that the function of a private insurance company is to provide high-quality, affordable health care, or are they in it only for the buck?
Well, I don't believe that, you know, it's not an ideal situation as is right now, but when I look at sort of this generalized health care plan that's kind of put out there, I'm still having a hard time being sold on it.
I can understand that. Look, it's... You know, and the Obama plan is far from perfect. I would go different. But this is what I want you to think about, okay? Number one, in your own mind, should everybody have health care in the United States as a right, as does exist all over the world, including the UK? Number two, how does it happen that in America we end up spending well over twice as much as they do in the UK? We're spending a whole lot of money. And number three, our health care outcomes. You describe a friend of yours who unfortunately had a misdiagnosis and a problem. But I will tell you that in this country, as I mentioned earlier, there are many people who just don't get to the doctor when they're sick. And by the time they walk in the door, it's often too late. So those are some of the issues that I hope you will think about. There is no healthcare system in the world that is perfect. None that is. None that doesn't have its share of problems. But I think we have got to address the fact that everybody in this country should have healthcare as a right, and we got to figure out how we do it in a cost-effective way.
Dirk, thanks a lot for the call. Carl in Chicago, we have a minute to the break. Carl, quick one.
Hi. Do you see the similarity between the California gold rush and what's happening right now? But instead of gold, it's a cheap labor rush. And companies in the United States are rushing all over the world to set up shop with cheap labor, with no benefits, with no health care, making incredible profits.
Okay, let's let Bernie answer the question.
I would use the analogy of the gold rush. Jack Welch, who is the former head of General Electric, he made a rather famous statement, and he said, you know, if I had my way, I would put our manufacturing plants on a barge. In other words, so that they can go to the countries in the world with the cheapest labor. You know, this is very clear. Every major corporation in our country has moved outsourced jobs to low-wage countries. Many of these guys are stashing their money in the Cayman Islands and other tax havens. I think what you're saying is an effort on the part of corporate America to really turn its back on American workers and drive us into a race to the bottom.
It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders answering your questions in our national town hall meeting. Brunch with Bernie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your questions and Senator Sanders' answers right after this here on the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. It's Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Actually, Anything Goes Friday coming up after Stephen Stills is going to be with us at the top of the hour, musician, singer, songwriter. Wayne in Chicago, Illinois, listening to WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Yes, I have a comment and a question. My comment is, I hope that everybody in America can become politically aware to the point that they realize that if, God forbid, Mr. Obama doesn't win this election, that Senator Sanders should run in 2016. When he stood on the Senate floor for, I think it was 26 and 8 hours, it was just a brilliant display of what's going on in the real world. I hope that the American people become politically aware and realize that Bernie Sanders should be president. I hope he runs. But my question is, do you think that Obama realizes now that the Republicans are not going to work with him if he gets elected to a second term, and is he preparing for that reality? Thank you very much.
Wayne, thank you very much for that very generous comment. And in terms of your second question, it is enormously important. I have talked to the president. I've been active in the Democratic caucus. I'm an independent in that caucus. And making the point that the president has got to understand that, yes, it's great to reach out and work with people and work out differences. Of course, that is the right thing to do. But when you have a situation in which 2 years ago Mitch McConnell made it very clear, said it publicly, our major priority is to make sure that Obama does not have a second term. When we have seen a record number of filibusters, a degree of obstructionism in the Senate that we have never seen in the modern history of this country, the president has finally got to wake up and understand that these folks do not want to work with him. They want to defeat him. They want to destroy him. And in my view, what the president has got to do is to let the American people understand that not only are these folks obstructionist, they are way out of touch in terms of what the middle class wants and needs. And the way to defeat Republicans is not necessarily doing it just inside the Beltway. It's taking your case to the American people. I would like to see after the election and after the president wins, if he does not get cooperation from the Republicans, to go around this country and make it clear that you have a Republican Party that wants to give tax breaks to billionaires while they cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and education. What percentage of the American people believe in that? And I believe that given the president's extraordinary articulateness, he can create a situation where millions of people, Republicans, independents, Democrats, are calling up the Congress and speaking, demanding that their senators and their congressmen end the obstructionism and vote for the American people. In terms of deficit reduction, which we are going to deal with as soon as the election is over, the American people are clear. They want the wealthy to begin paying their fair share of taxes at a time when the wealthy are doing phenomenally well. They want large corporations to be paying their fair share of taxes at a time when one out of four profitable corporations pays nothing. They want to end these outrageous tax havens in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda, by which we're losing $150 billion a year. So what the president has got to do, in my view, is demand that the American people stand up and support a progressive agenda which says that we're going to balance the budget in a way that is fair, not on the backs of working people, that we are going to create the millions of jobs this country needs, that we're going to protect women's rights, that we're going to deal with global warming, that we're going to make college education affordable. All of these ideas are popular ideas. This is what the American people want. This is not what the Republicans want. And the president's job is to bring the voice of the American people into Washington and demand that Republicans listen to them, or else they're going to pay a very strong political price.
Jerry, in New Brunswick, Canada, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I'm a Canadian, and we have a Medicare system in Canada. And that gentleman that called about being worried about if you had that in the United States, well, he has nothing to worry about. It is the best system you could ever have. And as far as one of the things that I realize is that when we get into you go to an outpatient department, everybody goes. It doesn't make any difference who it is, and they're all seen by a doctor. So it's the best system you could ever have.
Well, Jerry,
I don't know why Americans are afraid of it.
Well, I'll tell you why, Jerry, because there is a massive amount of propaganda. You may remember that during the debate over health care reform in the United States, there were ads on television, there were attacks not only on the system, the National Health Service of the UK, but on the Canadian healthcare system as well. And there were lies and lies and lies. And I think, you know, it's interesting that right now in Canada you have a conservative prime minister. In the UK there is a conservative prime minister. Neither one of these guys are talking about doing away with their healthcare systems, because they know that would be a disaster for them politically, because that is what the people want. In terms of the UK, interestingly enough, Tom, you remember during the Olympics, what did they do in London? What did the British people promote as part of
in the opening ceremony?
Health system.
Yeah, right.
And here you have in America, people say, oh, it's the worst system in the world. It is terrible. And there you have in front of the entire world, the people of the UK saying, we are very proud of the fact that everybody in the UK has the right to go to a doctor, regardless of their income. So, getting back to the point that I think it was Dirk from Texas who made earlier, of course, there is no system in the world that doesn't have problems. There is no system in the world where people are misdiagnoses are going to be made. But clearly the United States has a long way to go to make sure that our people have health care as a right, as do the people of virtually every other major country on Earth.
So well said. Senator Sanders, Bernie, thank you so much for being with us again today.
All right, my pleasure, Tom. Take care.
It's always an honor. We will be back with Stephen Stills.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, so here's what happened the night, literally the night, that President Obama was sworn in as President of the United States. January 20th, 2009, 14 Republican leaders from Congress. Paul Ryan, who's running for vice president right now. Eric Cantor, who yesterday gave a talk, introduced Mitt Romney, talking about how he loves bipartisanship. The House Whip, Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, Pete Sessions, Republican from Texas, Jeb Hensarling, Republican from Texas, Pete Hoekstra, Republican from Michigan, Dan Lundgren, Republican from California, Jim DeMint, Senator, now the followers are senators, Jim DeMint, Senator from South Carolina, Republican, John Kyle, Republican from Arizona, Tom Coburn, Republican from Oklahoma, John Ensign, Republican from Nevada, and Bob Corker, the Republican from Tennessee. Along with them, Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz. These guys had a four-hour private room, invitation-only meeting the night that the rest of us were going to inaugural balls all around this city. I was at the one at Union Station here. Tip of the hat, many thanks to Ellen Ratner for making that possible. The Talk Radio News Service got us tickets. And that night, these guys were sitting in the Caucus Room restaurant, this restaurant right around the corner from the back end of the building that Louise and I used to live in, just a few blocks from where we are now. It's over at the corner of 9th and D. It's a very, very fancy, schmancy, upscale, very, very expensive restaurant. It's where the lobbyists go to hang out, basically, and the members of Congress. Louise and I used to walk by there every night, on our way home, and frequently saw members of Congress being walked out so drunk that they could, had to be carried, basically. Actually, I can honestly say every single person I saw in that condition being carried out of the Caucus Room restaurant was a Republican. I'm not going to name names, but we've seen them. In any case, these 14 Republicans got together with Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor and swore a blood oath that they were going to do everything they could. Now, keep in mind, at this point in time, the economy was losing 800,000 jobs a month. The stock market was down around 6,000 or 7,000. It's at 13,000 now. We were sliding into a Great Depression, and not just the United States, the entire world was following us. And they swore an oath to each other to be the obstructionists. As Pete Sessions, who was there, went on to say in an interview in March, a couple months later with the National Journal, a right-wing National Journal, this would be like the Taliban insurgency. He said, we need to understand that Taliban insurgency may be required when dealing with the other side, when dealing with Democrats. We will have become the insurgency. I think insurgency is a mindset, Congressman Sessions says. Representative Kevin McCarthy, who was there, says, we've got to challenge them on every single bill. Show united and unyielding opposition to the president's economic policies. These are guys, all of them, every single one of these 14 Republican legislators had voted yes to the Bush-Cheney 2008 Bear Stearns, or stimulus, excuse me. They had voted yes to bailing out Bear Stearns. They had voted yes on bailing out AIG. They had voted yes on the 2008 September TARP, Bush-Cheney TARP, and they had voted yes on the Bush-Cheney October TARP. So it wasn't like they were afraid to spend money to save the economy. They had been doing it. They'd been trying to do it under the previous few months of the Bush administration, but they swore to each other they would not do it under the Obama administration. Every one of these senior members now have threatened to shut down the government over the debt ceiling. They have filibustered more than 300 bills in Congress. Every single one of them said no to Al Franken's anti-rape amendment, to the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, to the Lilly Ledbetter Equal Pay Act, to the Fair Pay Act, to an anti-outsourcing bill. They all said no to it. Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Henseling, P. Hoekstra, and Dan Lundgren, this from the Keep Them Honest's post over at the Daily Kos back on June 8th, if you want to find it in the archives, all of those guys voted no on every single piece of legislation, including increasing FEMA's budget when there are natural disasters. I mean, they were willing to bring the country to its knees over natural disasters to stop the president. So given this history of the last 4 years, this is how the Republicans have tried to kneecap our economy. This is Mitt Romney making his closing pitch. Mitt Romney basically saying, you know, we have prevented the President of the United States from accomplishing the things that he wanted to do. Therefore, if you reelect him, we'll continue to prevent him from doing the things he wants to do. So you should elect me, because then the Republican obstructionism will stop. How is that different from the shop owner who owns a little pizzeria in Little Italy in New York City, and the mob guy comes by with a baseball bat in his hand and says, hey, nice store you got here. Be a shame if anything happened. Maybe a baseball bat went through the windows or something. You know, you give us $50 a week and we can make sure nothing happens to you, buddy. Here's Mitt Romney making that pitch.
It's within the power of the American people to choose their own future. We know what we need to know. You can stay on the path of the last 4 years, or you can choose real change. You know that if the president is reelected, he will still be unable to work with the people in Congress. I mean, he's ignored them, he's attacked them, he's blamed them. The debt ceiling will come up again, and shutdown and default will be threatened, chilling the economy.
By the Republicans?
The president was right when he said he can't change Washington from the inside. In this case, you can take him at his word. We're going to put him outside soon.
Yeah, so this has been their strategy literally since that night, that meeting in the caucus room, when the following members of Congress committed treason against the United States of America. And I realize I'm saying this on the air to 3 million people right now. I defy you. Any of these guys, call into this show, sue me, go, you know, prove me wrong. Congressman Paul Ryan, you committed treason. Congressman Eric Cantor, Congressman Kevin McCarthy, Congressman Pete Sessions, Jeb Henseling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren, Senator Jim DeMint, Senator John Kyle, Senator Tom Coburn, Senator John Ensign, Senator Bob Corker, you violated your oath of office. You swore to each other not to uphold the Constitution of the United States, not to defend the people of the United States and the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, political and foreign and domestic. You decided to become an enemy of the United States domestically. Newt Gingrich, as he left that meeting, said, quote, you'll remember this as the day the seeds of 2012 were sown. And you just heard Mitt Romney close that circle, wrap that argument. Republican leaders in Congress literally plotting the night that President Obama was being inaugurated in the Caucus Room restaurant, right here in Washington, D.C., plotting to bring this country economically to its knees so that a Democratic president would be blamed for it. And they have done their best. They have fought everything. I mean, the president's job bill, which would have put a million people to work immediately, you know, a year ago, he proposed this thing in the House of Representatives, Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, they wouldn't even bring it up for a vote. Harry Reid brought it up for a vote in the Senate. The Republicans filibustered it. Legislation that Nancy Pelosi, during the 2 years when they controlled when the Democrats controlled the House, they only controlled the Senate for 2 months and 1 day. And they got a hell of a lot done in those 2 months and 1 day and a little more. The largest middle class tax cut in history, saved Chrysler, saved GM, stopped 800,000 jobs a month from vanishing, increased education spending, got the banksters out of the student loan business, saving $80 billion for more student loans. Passed hate crime laws, expanded the Affordable Care Act, the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIPS, was expanded, child labor laws were enforced, Wall Street reform. They got a lot done.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But the Democrats controlled the Senate for 2 months and 1 day, and now the Republicans are threatening to kneecap this country again. What do we do about traitors?
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
Anything goes. Friday. Okay, you've heard my rant on treason. I'll leave it at that. This is supposed to be the day when you can call and say anything you want. So, Ryan in Gaithersburg, Maryland, the floor is yours. Ryan?
Yeah.
You are on the air, sir.
Oh, okay. You know, I had a question because I was looking at some stuff last night, doing some research with it, because I got into an argument with a guy about the debt. Now, the debt was like $5.6 trillion when he took office. It was like $10.8 trillion or something when he left, right?
Sounds about right.
Over $10.8 trillion. Now we're up to $16 trillion,
right,
which is equal to GDP. Now,
roughly.
I'm sure that it's because of a lot of the policies giving people a tax cut during two wars, which is the first time it's ever happened in the history of civilization, giving people a tax cut during a wartime.
Right. It's also the first time we've ever run a war without putting it on the budget.
Right. So what I'm wondering here, okay, is that since, like, percentage-wise, he's spending just about the same amount of money in half the time, right? And I agree that...
No, he's not spending the same amount of money.
But
the national debt. No, wait a minute. Hold on. Your premise is wrong. He's not spending the same amount of money. He's spending has actually in many areas been reduced during the Obama administration. The problem is tax revenues are down, and the main reason tax revenues are down and some government expenses are up is because people are out of work. Is because of the Bush recession. Back
okay.
to you.
So a lot of those jobs are. Right.
A lot of what?
A lot of those jobs that have been gone. When we went from 5% unemployment up to 9%, a lot of those jobs are never coming back.
Well, a lot of the jobs that we started losing when you know Reagan started talking about free trade and you know after NAFTA, GATT, the WTO, a lot of those jobs will not come back until we change our trade policies. I think that we could very simply change our trade policies. Nancy Pelosi, for example, got passed out of the House of Representatives in 2010. She got passed a law that said that the tax break that Bain Capital is using right now to ship Sensata, to ship the machinery over to China, they literally get a check from the government for that, or they get to reduce their tax burden by that, their tax load by that. The tax break that company, that Bain Capital gets for shipping those jobs over to China, and the tax advantage that they get for making things in China and then determining the price at which they sell them to themselves when they sell them back into the United States so they can determine where they keep the profit. So they create the Chinese manufacturing operation, they create a company in the Cayman Islands, and then they have the company in the United States that ends up with the product. They take the product that they're going to retail, they're going to sell to General Motors for $100, costs them a dollar to manufacture in China. They sell it to the Cayman Islands company on paper. They don't ship it there. Sell it to the Cayman Islands company for a dollar. The Cayman Island company sells it to the U.S. company for $100. The U.S. company sells it to GM for $100. The U.S. company shows no profit. The Chinese company shows no profit. The Cayman Island company shows a $99 profit and pays no taxes. This is how Bain does this. This is how Mitt Romney got rich. Nancy Pelosi passed a law that would say these tax breaks are no longer available to American companies. You can't do this anymore. It was passed by, you know, out of the House. A majority of people passed it. It got to the Senate. A majority of the Senate voted for it. But the Republicans filibustered it, and therefore it never went into effect. Had that gone into effect, you would have jobs coming back into the United States right now. Very, very straightforward stuff. So, you know, anyhow, in answer to your question, it could be done. Stephen Stills on the line with a musician, singer, songwriter, Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young in Buffalo Springfield and all kinds of cool stuff. Stephen Stills, you wrote a brilliant piece for Rolling Stone. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. You actually just hit one of my hot point, which was the perpetual filibuster.
There you go. So, I'm sorry, we just have a...
greeted the president upon his first day in office.
Yes.
I really thought that went a long way towards holding everything up.
Yes.
It was actually a tactic that the Senate majority...
Yep, Mitch McConnell,
majority
yep.
leader. Yeah, Mitch McConnell, because he announced that he was going to do, that there's going to be a one-term president, and this is our first weapon. So thank you for saying that. It pretty much echoes what I said. I just kind of ran that off, getting all my thoughts together on the election.
Yeah, well, it was a great one, and I take it that you're going to be voting for President Obama and encouraging others to do the same.
Well, I wrote it. We were in New York, mm-hmm. and I said I got to do. I'm not. You've kept me on the road so long. I haven't been able to do any campaigning. So let me do something, and my publicist arranged for the Rolling Stone guy to meet me, and I basically sat there and wrote it, half dictated and half wrote it in the office of Rolling Stone, and
yeah.
It's gotten a huge number of hits, so I'm really happy about
it. Oh, it's a damn good riff. It's a damn good riff. In fact, you make the point. You know, you say, when was Black Friday? When did the Dow drop 800 points? When was the biggest heist in history with no accountability? Watching Mitt Romney and the Republicans campaign right now, you'd never know these things happened during the Bush administration. So true.
No, of course not. Of course not. And it's all in there. And then, of course, my talent is the little jokey line at the end. With songs like Love the One You Win.
Yeah.
Like that.
There you go.
of course, that's what everyone's been asking about. But I pretty much feel like that's a nice contribution to the campaign.
Yeah, I agree. And your point, Mitt Romney is a creepier...
I'm going to sit and bite my nails until... I'm going to be... By Tuesday, I'll be the color of an eggplant. My breath.
There you go. And you said you never thought you'd see a creepier politician than Nixon. I didn't either. And there he is, Mitt Romney. Stephen Stills, brilliant, sir. I have been listening to your music since I was we're about the same age, but since I was a wee young one. And really appreciate your work. Thank you so much for dropping by.
Well, thank you. And vote for Obama.
There you
go.
You got it, sir. You got it. We'll do it. Thank you, Stephen Stills.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And it's Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day, right after this. Who's singing that? Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was an obscure Buffalo Springfield song since Stephen Stills was just on. Senator Sherrod Brown on the line with us from Ohio. SherrodBrown.com, of course, his website. 2 hours in Sherrod. And Senator Brown, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's always, you're not showing your age, Tom, when it's either Buffalo Springfield or Barry McGuire when you quote him. So.
I know.
How many of your listeners remember Barry Maguire, right?
I think probably a fair number.
Yeah, particularly if you say the song, right?
There you go. Yep. Yeah.
Evil
Destruction. Good. Great. Great to have you with us. We have been kind of keeping track of the money that has been pouring into Ohio via Karl Rove and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, all this money from China coming in via Shelley Adelson and all these others. You know, what kind of flood are you up against these days?
Well, now it's up to $31 million. And, you know, this is money
that they're pouring against you.
$31 million just against me, and it's wow. TV and radio. Doesn't count the billboards and the mails and mail they do and all that. But it really is, you know, what's despicable. I mean, it's aimed at me, so I'm not asking for sympathy. But what's despicable about it is on the one end, they do voter suppression, trying to suppress the turnout, especially among low-income voters and elderly and less educated voters. And the other end, they try to buy these elections, and they don't have to disclose the money. We think it's, as you were suggesting, we think it's money that the companies that outsource jobs to China, and we think it's money from Wall Street and oil companies. And these guys want to buy elections on the one end and suppress the vote that might not vote with them on the other. And it's pretty morally reprehensible. And all the stuff they've done, this in moral terms, maybe the worst, the most outrageous things that Republicans are doing around the country.
Yeah, it is. And who is supplying all this cash to take you down?
Well, it comes through organizations. There are now eight groups in the state. There are eight different organizations that are spending money against me. Like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Crossroads, 60 Plus. We figure it's all sort of, or it's now about 45,000 ads so far they've run.
Wow.
It's like Karl Rove, though, is directing the choir. I mean, it's this group will come in for a while. Then most of the year they had a different group every week. Now they're going into the full Hallelujah chorus where they're all singing at the same time.
Why?
Different kinds of segments of the election.
Why are they so determined to try to unseat Senator Sherrod Brown? SherrodBrown.com.
Well, I think it's my progressive politics. I mean, it's Ohio. It's a state that's a swing state, obviously. And when they hit me, it can hurt the president. When I do well, the president can do a little better. When the president does well, I do better. But I think it's really just these interest groups. I mean, I'm the sponsor of the bill to break up the six largest trillion-dollar banks. That's got to figure Wall Street's spending money here. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill to take away the tax breaks to the oil companies that they've had far too many years, and we figure their money's in. And I'm the sponsor of the China currency bill, which levels the playing field with China on trade. And so we figure it's the Sheldon Adelsons, as you suggest, and the Koch brothers and this whole crowd of people that want tax cuts for the rich. They want elimination of state tax. They want weaker environmental laws. They want to eviscerate labor law. All the things the middle class was built on. And the whole idea of an opportunity society where young people get a chance to get ahead. And if these guys have their way, young people won't be able to get Pell Grants of any magnitude or get a chance to go to community college or a state university.
Yeah. Yeah, and how dare you tell the truth about such things?
Yeah, there's others that are doing it, but it's just sort of a confluence of factors here.
I'm curious your take on Mitt Romney's closing argument. As I'm sure you know, Robert Draper's book, Do Not Ask What Good We Do, came out a month or two ago, and he revealed, and nobody has challenged this. In fact, it's been confirmed by several people who were there, that 14 Republican members of Congress met in the caucus room restaurant, you know, the fancy schmancy restaurant around the corner at 9th and D, Northwest here. I used to live in the building that's on the back side of it. And the night that President Obama was sworn into office, and Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Hensling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, John Ensign, and Bob Corker, along with Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich, and basically swore an oath to each other to obstruct the president. In fact, the way that it was described later in a National Journal interview with Congressman Sessions was a Taliban insurgency. He said, insurgency is a mindset. We need to understand that insurgency may be required when dealing with the Democrats. Kevin McCarthy said, we've got to challenge them on every single bill, show united and unyielding opposition to the president's economic policies. And then as he was walking out of the meeting, on the record, Newt Gingrich said, you'll remember this day as the day we he said, that's a paraphrase. He said, you'll remember this day as the day the seeds of 2012 were sown. And this has been their strategy for 4 years. And now Mitt Romney is making this closing argument that basically because of 4 years of Republican obstruction, you should vote for a Republican for president because the bullies will cooperate with him and they won't cooperate with the president. I've got the audio of it. It runs about 20 seconds. I don't know if you've already heard it or want to hear it, but up to you. And but I'm curious.
Go ahead.
Okay, here's Mitt Romney's closing argument, which is the closing the circle that started in this January 20th, 2009 dinner at the or 4-hour meeting in a private room at the caucus room restaurant.
It's within the power of the American people to choose their own future. We know what we need to know. You can stay on the path of the last 4 years,
that's
or you can choose real change. You know that if the president is reelected, he will still be unable to work with the people in Congress.
So
I mean, he's ignored.
Just stop right there. That's enough. He continues, you know, but basically he's saying, you know, if you don't elect me, Romney, my buddies are going to kneecap your country.
Yeah, it's a little too. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised at any of that. You remember the McConnell quote earlier? This
yeah.
was 2 years later, but McConnell said our number one goal is defeat Obama. You know, you think of that, and that's what makes even more remarkable what's happening. In my state, the unemployment rate, soon after, when the Auto Rescue and the Recovery Act began to take effect, if you will, the unemployment rate was 10.6% in Ohio. Now it's 7%. So even with Republican intransigence, they wouldn't let us pass a good highway bill. They won't let us pass real jobs bills. They won't let us do what we ought to do on China and on infrastructure. Even with all that, the unemployment rate's dropped 3.5 points in my state. And that's not good enough. Nobody's arguing that. But even when they're saying, make this president fail, and, you know, the president, frankly, I thought the president put the olive branch out there time and time again, and they just broke it off. I mean, they really didn't have interest in working together. During the health care bill, the president, you know, it took a lot. It took months and months and months of negotiation when a lot of Republican amendments in the bill. And then at the end, they just walked away and said no, even though there was a lot of compromise that Democrats were doing. In my mind, too much compromise sometimes. I mean, I'll work with the other party and have lots of achievements where we've done it, but sometimes, I mean, you got to draw the line, and these guys just simply don't want the president to move forward, and the country gets hurt as a result. There's no question.
Yeah, my sense of this, we're talking with Senator Sherrod Brown, by the way, sherrodbrown.com. Although your voice is so distinctive, I'm sure everybody knew, even if they just tuned in. My take on this is that if the president is reelected, that this is the point at which this Republican strategy gets outed, that he pulls a Harry Truman and starts calling them the do-nothing Congress, and they are going to have to, I mean, the crises facing this country are reaching such a high threshold that if they just continue to refuse to play, it's going to be on their heads.
Well, I think a sense of patriotism in the business community and a sense of self-interest in the business community that they can't keep seeing the Republicans trying to make Barack Obama fail will make this a very different Congress with the president's reelection. I saw what the business community was very unhappy during a lot of the debt ceiling stuff. They were especially unhappy during the transportation bill, but they didn't want to jeopardize the Republican campaign against Obama. Once the president's reelected and there is no campaign against him on the ballot again, I think that the Tea Party, the far right of the Republican Party, will begin to get isolated. I also think that Republicans might say some malarkey, pardon the use of that word again, but see what happens when the Republicans nominate a moderate like Romney. They turn even farther to the right. There will be some sentiment there, but I think overall the public's going to begin to push these guys, and you guys got to do something to work together. And, you know, the answer is not for the Democrats to keep moving to the right to try to find common ground, because the right keeps pulling the electorate, or keeps pulling their people further right, as you know.
Right. And I know over at SherrodBrown.com, you have a constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United. This, you said, was it $30 million now that they...
$31 million so far. They'll get to probably $40 million when you add in the mail and the billboards and all that.
Right.
And I appreciate your suggesting people come to my website, because we've got a petition signed by almost 500,000 people so far. So this isn't coming to SherrodBrown.com. It's not just helping my campaign, but it's a long-term effort to work with people like Senator Sanders and Senator Whitehouse and Senator Udall and others to move forward on this on the Citizens United case. Because when you look at voter suppression on the one end and buying elections on the other, it's a threat to our country, and it's a threat to it's just gonna turn us into a country where the rich govern have more power even than they already have, and that you don't have a vibrant democracy when there is so much inequality.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the big issues of our time is these insane Supreme Court decisions, starting with Buckley and through First National Bank and Bilotti and then Citizens United, just cementing into place the ability of Karl Rove to buy elections, or the ability, frankly, of a foreign corporation to come in and buy an election.
We really don't know who they are. That's
yeah, yeah. It's just absolutely remarkable. It's breathtaking. Senator Sherrod Brown, one of the guys out on the front lines fighting the good fight. You can sign his petition over at sherrodbrown.com. And, Senator, I wish you the very best in the upcoming election. Thank you very much for dropping by.
For everything. Thanks for what you're doing.
Okay. Good speaking with you. We will be back. Anything Goes Friday right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And give us a call at 866-987-THOM or drop into our free live chat room at TomHartman.com.
We can change the world. We'll change the world.
Indeed. That was Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Stephen Stills on the program with us just a little while ago, just before Senator Sherrod Brown. And Victoria Jones on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service. This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, Don Siegelman. You can learn all about that and sign the petition to President Obama asking that he pardon Don Siegelman at free-don.org. Victoria Jones. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Great to see
in
you.
Election Watch News today, I have two pieces of news. The first is that the Justice Department announced today that its Civil Rights Division plans to deploy more than 780 federal observers and department personnel to 51 jurisdictions in 23 states for the November 6th general election.
Wow. Is this in response to specific complaints or concerns, or are they not saying?
It does not say that. It says that the Civil Rights Division is charged with enforcing the federal voting rights laws that protect the rights of all citizens to access the ballot on the election day, and talks about the Voting Rights Act of 1965 in some detail, and just says that, you know, it's authorized to ask the Office of Personnel Management to send federal observers to areas that have been certified for coverage by a federal court or the Attorney General. And it lists them. Some areas of interest, Maricopa County, Arizona, that's Joe Arpaio's county.
Oh, interesting.
Cuyahoga County, Ohio.
Cuyahoga County. Yes.
Cuyahoga, thank you. Lorain County, Ohio. Pima County, Arizona. Arapahoe County, Colorado, and Denver. A number of counties in Florida. Franklin County, Ohio. Hamilton County, Ohio. Four counties in Pennsylvania, including Allegheny County, Lehigh County, and Philadelphia, and Milwaukee also.
Wow. These are all areas that are heavily minority, heavily Democratic-leaning, and apparently where the Department of Justice expects that there's going to be serious and illegal voter suppression efforts.
Right. I mean, there are other places, of course, as Dallas County, Texas, Jefferson County, Texas. I'm mentioning the battleground states. There's two counties in North Carolina, for example.
Right. So this isn't a partisan effort. This is a genuine effort to stop voter suppression or voter discrimination.
Oh, yes, indeed. Shannon County, South Dakota, Williamsburg County, South Carolina.
Right.
You know, there are counties that clearly are not Democratic-leaning at all. Richland County, South Carolina, Shelby County, Tennessee, that is not voting Democratic.
Right. Very interesting.
So it's very, very interesting indeed. Also in Election Watch News today, very interesting decision, an appellate court judge in Pennsylvania has refused to stop the state from advertising its suspended voter ID law. This is a publicity campaign that critics argue was misleading to voters. Commonwealth Court Judge Robert Simpson said in a ruling today that the groups that asked for the advertising to be halted never offered credible proof that the state's campaign would be likely to cause disenfranchisement.
Wait a minute. Although the courts have said that if you're a registered voter, you know, historically you sign the paper, you show your voter card, whatever, you can vote, and they passed this law that said, no, you've got to have a photo ID. that law has been struck down by the courts, but the state is still running television ads or radio ads or both that say you must bring a photo ID so people who don't own a car are going to be discouraged and they're not going to show up to vote. And this judge just said the state can continue to run an ad saying that a law that has been struck down is actually the law of the land. Am I characterizing that accurately?
Not quite. The judge, who's a Republican, ruled last month that Pennsylvania couldn't enforce its new voter ID law for this election.
So it wasn't struck down. It was just put in abeyance.
Right.
But still, they're advertising as if it existed, as if it was enforced.
And the ads carry the slogan, "Show it," with the tagline, "If you have it," in small print.
Man. Well, you know, Tom Corbett, big-time Republican, the governor of Pennsylvania. Okay, what else is going on?
Also, final arguments today. President Barack Obama is going after Mitt Romney in Ohio, where he made a number of stops. He was all about Ohio today. On the Romney Jeep ad, saying vigorously, the car companies themselves have told Governor Romney to knock it off. Everybody knows it's not true. Saying, I understand that Governor Romney has had a tough time here in Ohio, but you don't scare hardworking Americans just to scare up some votes. That's not what being president is all about. He also said, this isn't a game. These are people's jobs.
Yes, and their lives.
And their lives, indeed. Yeah. Mitt Romney, on the other hand, making the argument as his closing argument that another debt ceiling standoff will follow if Obama receives a second term, leading to a possible government shutdown and default on debts, making the argument that he's the one who can stop that. Not so, says Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who's saying it's Mitt Romney's fantasy.
Yeah. So Mitt Romney's primary argument is, my party will kneecap the country if you don't elect me.
You could put it like that.
Okay. All right. Just to be clear.
One could put it like that.
Yeah. So what else is going
on? Jobs report came out today for October. U.S. added 171,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate rose from 7.8% to 7.9%. Also, jobs numbers were revised upward for September and August. So there was something in this for everybody, and everybody jumped on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Interesting bill coming up in the lame duck session. This is the 2008 surveillance law that's set to expire at the end of the year, likely to consume valuable time. And Senator Ron Wyden has placed a hold on the bill.
Oh,
basically, intelligence officials in the Obama administration want to continue it, and the expiring provisions allow the federal government to conduct surveillance of foreign targets without individual court orders, even if those targets are communicating with people in the United States. Right. And Ron Wyden says no,
unless
it gets fixed.
Yeah, power once taken is very rarely pried back from the fingers of those who have it. Anyhow, that's a rant for another time. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
As always, you do a marvelous job. And be sure to get over to free-don.org and sign that petition. Don Siegelman.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it is Anything Goes Friday. This just blows my mind. Mitt Romney's closing argument, Obama's closing argument. Romney's closing argument is, our Republicans have kneecapped this country for 4 years. We have fought every attempt by this president to make the economy better, to put people back to work, Even to pay down people's mortgages when they're underwater. There's actually legislation to do that the Republicans stopped. Every effort to help the American people, the Republicans have blocked for 4 years. Therefore, Romney says, vote for him. Right. Because he's going to do what? Suddenly the Republicans are going to start helping people because there's a Republican in the White House? I don't think so. I think it'll just go on steroids. You will see new members of the Supreme Court who are going to say, oh, child labor laws, that's an interference in the right to contract. That's unconstitutional. We're going to go back to the Lochner Court. Back to the way it was in the 19-teens, the 19-aughts. Back literally when the Supreme Court was saying that the anti-child labor laws are unconstitutional because their interference is in the right to contract, that the right to discriminate based on race or gender is illegal because it's unconstitutional, because the Constitution doesn't say that. It's not an enumerated power. I just, with Robert Bork, Judge Bork, being Mitt Romney's judicial advisor, Mitt Romney refusing to let us know who his bundlers are, who are the people who are raising millions of dollars for him. He won't release their names. He won't release his own tax returns. This guy's hiding a lot. And I just find it astounding that 45, 46, 47% of America might even seriously be thinking about voting for him. I just find that breathtaking. Robert, in Great Court, South Carolina. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind?
Yes, Jared, Senator Brown touched on the elderly voting.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to frame a comment around that, if I might.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Well, here in South Carolina, we have a 108-year-old woman wanting to vote for the first time.
Wow.
She's wanting to vote for Obama.
Uh-huh.
And she's getting a lot of snide remarks in the newspaper about that. And those are the ones that I call them low-grade millionaires and millionaire wannabes, you know, that support the Republican position on health care and so forth.
Right.
And I just thought that you'd be interested in knowing about that. And
that's a very interesting story. Robert, yeah. Thanks for calling and sharing it with us. I wonder if she's 108 years old. She probably was born at home. I wonder if she has her birth certificate, if she's going to be able to vote, you know. That's the other part of the story, is that a lot of these folks, a lot of the older folks, you know, they don't have the necessary documentation nowadays to get the necessary photo ID to be able to legally vote in some states. So that's a big challenge. Robert, thank you for the call. Much appreciated. Kathy in Naples, Florida. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I don't really have a question. More of a comment. Mm-hmm. I look forward to Friday so that I can listen to Senator Saunders. I think he is a remarkable gentleman, and I also hope that he will become the president someday. Tomorrow would be soon enough for me. I would like to tell you about myself and my son. Once I was upper middle class, I spent 10 years at the university level getting an education, and I was a college professor as well as a nurse practitioner, and I know you have great respect for nurse practitioners mm-hmm. after your experience in the hospital, and I must say,
well, and one of my daughters
that's the
is
only
one.
Time when it comes of a benefit and a value to me these days.
Yeah.
I am disabled, as is my son, and very through no fault of our own, and very frequently we are totally forgotten about the disabled and the sick in this country, but Senator Saunders does not forget us.
Yep.
And he does advocate for the people who are truly sick. And I'm not even 50 years old. And my son and I are, every day, we feel like we have to fight off the vultures in every single way that you can possibly imagine. When you're at the mercy of the goodness of others at a time like this, it's not a good situation.
Yeah.
And, so I'd like to say to all the other disabled people who are out there and I know are listening that, you know, we still have intrinsic value, even if we aren't productive members of society. I use my mind to help educate other people on issues and to provide comfort and letting them know they are not alone.
Right.
My son needed a new power wheelchair, and we just got it yesterday, though it's not paid for yet. It was $35,000.
Wow. That's a mind-boggling amount of money.
And that's just one piece of medical equipment out of a great deal that he needs because he has muscular dystrophy.
Oh, my. Okay.
And you would think that
it'd be a very sophisticated wheelchair.
Telethons before, long before I was born.
Yeah, Jerry Lewis.
And a doctor described the situation very well in 1864, you know, as well as it is described today, that they would have at least some kind of treatment, let alone a cure. There is nothing.
Huh. Interesting. Well, Kathy, thank you for sharing your perspective with us. I wish you and your son the very best, and thank you for your kind words about Senator Sanders. I'm going to move along to another call, but thank you. Much appreciated. Stu in Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Stu, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Let me get off the speakerphone here. Hey, I just want to make 2 points. Many calls ago when Senator Sanders was still on the line, a woman had called in and asked about restarting the programs during the New Deal, like the Works Progress Administration and the CCC and stuff like that, and it could be done. Executive order. I just want to let you know, I took my wife and children this summer to Shenandoah National Park, and at the Bird Visitor Center, they have a nice presentation there, and there's a film that they put on with you know, a bunch of old CCC workers and how they respond to what it was like back then. And during the film, it states that, I don't know about the WPA and those programs, but the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, was actually just defunded, but it specifically stated that it was never deauthorized.
Hmm.
So actually, I don't know if that could be done by executive order or not, but the program itself has never been deauthorized. It's only been defunded. So, and they made a special note to note that. And that kind of stuck with me. So
that's
whenever,
very interesting. Well, here's the problem. The Constitution explicitly says, in Article 1, Section 8, that the only branch of government which can authorize taxation or spending, in other words, where that could fund the CCC, the only branch of government is Congress. It has to originate in the House of Representatives, be passed by the Senate, and then signed by the President into law. But it has to start in the House of Representatives. And so, you know, with the Republicans controlling the House of Representatives, first of all, forget it. But secondly, you know, I find that fascinating, but it is the funding that is the critical thing. It's
right.
That's
can
always.
Can I make another point real quick?
Sure, go for it.
I know you're rushing. You got lots of callers. During the 2000 election, after the big fiasco and debacle there, you know, I heard a lot on the right about, you know, well, Al Gore can't even win his own state. If he would have won his own state, he would have won the presidency. Well, let's look at this today. Ohio has 18 electoral votes, according to what I found out today, and Wisconsin has 10, and Massachusetts has 11.
Right.
So, you know, the favorite son of Massachusetts can't win his own state. He's 21 points behind last time I checked.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin is about 8 points behind for Republicans, and that's 10 votes, and that's Paul Ryan's state. So, you know, we need to, you know, get ready to hear the sounds of the whambulance.
Yeah, there you go. And Mitt Romney, by the way, currently resides in California, where his home is being rebuilt to have a car elevator for his wife's second Cadillac. And literally, I mean, you know, he had to hire a lobbyist to get this car elevator put in his car, in his home. And he's not going to carry California either. So it's going to be an interesting time. Stu, thanks a lot for the call. Hope you can.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday in just a second. Friday, Lawrence in Big Spring, Texas. Hey, Lawrence, what's on your mind?
Well, I've got a couple of things to say.
Please pick one.
If you ain't making money, I mean, if you ain't spending money, you ain't making money. And if the doors ain't open, you're sure not going to make any money.
Okay.
So if you want to make money, you got to spend money. So if you want to make money at the retail, you got to open up the doors. The other thing is, I work in the oil field.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, Republicans are radicals. I mean, you come to work, you think, well, I work in the oil field, you know, it's pretty well camaraderie going on. But when it comes to politics, I mean, they want to overthrow the government.
Yeah.
They're crazy. I mean, they are really crazy. And they must be terrorists of some sort because, I mean, you feel threatened. I sure can't sit there and say, well, I'm a diehard Democrat. Because I tell you what, I feel threatened.
Wow. Okay, Lawrence, thanks for reporting from the oil fields of Big Spring, Texas. Good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. That's grim. Stephanie Cutter, the deputy campaign manager of Obama 2012, is on the line with us. Stephanie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
BarackObama.com, of course, the website. How's it going? How's the in fact, even before we get into that, I'm curious your take on Mitt Romney's closing argument that his party has been kneecapping this country for 4 years, and if you don't vote for him, they're gonna kneecap us even worse.
Yeah.
It sounds like
right.
An extortion racket. I'm serious.
Well, you know, I think, you know, we all know the story of the last 4 years that Republican leadership decided on the day of the president's inauguration, actually, the night of the inauguration, that they were going to do everything they could to make him a one-term president, which means they blocked a lot of pieces of important legislation that would have strengthened our economy, created jobs, helped middle-class Americans, and they put a stop to it for political purposes. So part of the president's closing argument is, you know, it's time for this country to come together. We have a lot of work to do. You know, I'll work with anybody if they're willing to work with me to move this country forward and strengthen the middle class. The president has a better record of pulling people together than Mitt Romney does. We know his record in Massachusetts. You know, I'm from Massachusetts. I remember when he was governor. There wasn't a lot of reaching across the aisle. He was a pretty detached governor. He spent most of the time actually running for president. You know, that's very different from our president, President Obama. Mm-hmm. Who has reached across the aisle, has brought people together. So, you know, there are a lot of things that I find interesting in Mitt Romney's closing argument. That's just one of them. Hopefully we can talk about his, claim on the change argument, which is
go for it.
Delusional.
Go for it. Why?
You know, well, it's delusional in that, you know, Mitt Romney is not an agent of change. If he's an agent of change, it's the wrong type of change. You know, we know what his agenda is, to give tax cuts to those at the top and have the middle class pay for it. That is might be change, but it's the wrong type of change. It's not going to send the country in the right direction. We've seen how that worked. That is actually one of the policies that crashed our economy, increased our deficits in the first place. Yeah. We know he wants to repeal Wall Street reform. So that is change, but it's change in the wrong direction. And it's going to put taxpayers back on the hook for bank bailouts. You know, so for him to talk about, you know, if you want change, vote for me, is, you know, I hope the American people are paying attention to that and see how wrongheaded it is.
Yeah, yeah. And the president, now that's, you know, Romney's position. He's basically saying, you know, vote for me or we'll kneecap the country. What's the president saying? What's his closing argument?
His closing argument is pretty simple. You know, one, this may be his last campaign. This is his last campaign. Hmm. But what he's running on is what he's been running on and fighting for his entire life, which is to reclaim the security that the middle class has lost, that we aren't strong as a country. Our economy isn't strong unless we have a strong middle class. That's what he's fighting for. That's what he's always fought for. And, you know, we know him. We know he says what he believes and does what he says. We can trust him. And, you know, that stands in sharp contrast to Mitt Romney, who is having election eve conversions on a whole number of issues. And then finally, you know, Mitt Romney is dressing up the same policies that crashed our economy, as I just said, and calling it change. Mm. The president is pointing the way forward to real change. You know, look at what we've accomplished over the last 4 years. Passed health care reform, so tens of millions of Americans will have access to health care. We reformed Wall Street so that taxpayers will no longer be on the hook for bailouts and that consumers are protected. We repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We ended the Iraq War. We're drawing down the Afghanistan War. We've cut taxes for the middle class. We've invested in education. We've taken care of our veterans. You know, the president has put in place real change, but we have more to do. And this is no time to turn back now. We have to finish what we started.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is so much. I mean, it was the Association of Structural Engineers in the United States that are the infrastructure of this country is $2 trillion in the hole. I mean,
yeah.
Basically, ever since the Reagan administration, mm-hmm. we have been ignoring the infrastructure of this country.
And, you know, the president, you know, we have a piece of legislation sitting on the Hill, Capitol Hill, that would invest in our infrastructure and put construction workers back to work. The only thing that's holding it up is that Republicans don't want to ask those at the top for a penny more in taxes, for them to go back to the Clinton-era tax rates, which, you know, led to 22 million jobs and the largest economic expansion since World War II. That's the only thing that's holding back progress on an infrastructure bill. And, of course, the president laid out at the convention and for his agenda for the second term, that he wants to do some nation building back here at home. You know, we've been fighting two wars for more than a decade. We've spent over $1 trillion. Well, one war has ended, and we're drawing down another. Let's use that money to do some nation building back here at home, and, you know, improve our infrastructure, our roads, bridges, highways, and put our construction workers back to work. You know, that's not only a jobs program, but that's an economy program, and that, you know, that means that businesses can ship their goods all over the world. That means that our communities improve and our economies grow.
Yeah, this is what Republican Dwight Eisenhower did. I mean, you'd think this is a no-brainer. I don't know how the Republicans in the House have just gone insane. That's the only thing I can come up with. Stephanie Cutter, the deputy campaign manager of Obama 2012, BarackObama.com, of course, the website. Get out and vote. Stephanie, thank you so much for the great work you're doing.
Thanks, Tom.
I'll tell you, the right-wingers are so frothing, and they're just... Anyway, Stephanie's great. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day here on Anything Goes Friday. Trying to grab a piece of audio off of, I think it was Ross Story here, but instead I got sent off to add hell. I hate it when that happens, right? Yes, let's listen to this. Apparently Mitt Romney has gone nuts about Jesus returning to America, and the audio's out there, and I don't know, maybe you can find it, Shane. Well, I'm taking phone calls here. Patrick in Petaluma, California. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better, Patrick. How about you?
Well, I'm thinking about writing in Barry Maguire for President Tom. I heard you say that before. I couldn't believe you pulled that one out.
Yeah.
I hope Harry Reid has learned his lesson. I hope he puts the filibuster wall back at 51, 52.
Yeah, well,
right,
he's
60.
I met with Harry Reid, a small group of people in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and he was pretty emphatic that they're going to change the Senate rules.
Great.
And, you know, I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. Maybe I am. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. He didn't
well,
say
I'm
make it as a
that.
Definite assertion, but you know, they're seriously looking at this.
Well, terrific. Tom, I went over to this website to see this list of scoundrels. It's actually a list of Republicans. It's on AmericanCleanElections.com. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, right under the list of scoundrels who not to vote for, there's this story about the swing voter on the Supreme Court, Justice Kennedy, and there's an article there written by a judge, a Superior Court judge named Richard E. Tuttle. He was an old friend of him, longtime friend and associate of Kennedy on the Supreme, of course, the swing vote on the Supreme Court.
Right.
Excuse me. And it turns out that I didn't know this. Kennedy was a lifelong corporate lobbyist.
Huh.
And he spells it all out. It's right there. And I thought, oh, my God, here's the guy deciding the Citizen United case.
Right. The swing vote.
It boggles my mind.
Yeah.
He was a corporate lobbyist. His dad, his father, was the second most powerful lobbyist in California.
Amazing.
His whole life.
And John Roberts was a $2 million a year corporate lawyer.
Oh, it's just insanity.
Yeah.
It's insanity, Tom.
It really is. This is what you're going to get more of if Mitt Romney becomes president, because the president nominates Supreme Court justices, and we've got four Supreme Court justices who are over 70. Three of them are over 75, one of them 74, and one of them has cancer. So,
it's scary.
Yeah.
It's really scary.
It really
and,
is.
Tom, I love that website, AmericanCleanElections.com, if anybody wants to run over there and take a look at it. It's really, really
okay.
Interesting.
I can't personally endorse it, but you gave it a good plug, Patrick. Thanks a lot for the call. Maggie in Buffalo Grove, Illinois. Hey, Maggie, what's up?
I wanted to ask,
They ask all the questions about Obama's background, his parents, all of that.
Right.
How come they don't go into Romney's background? They don't say anything about his siblings, and they don't say anything about all his relatives who are in Mexico, because his grandfather was married several times.
Well, she wasn't married several times. He was married to several women at the same time. He was a polygamist, and his great grandfather, I think it was. And there's been very surprisingly little discussion about Mitt Romney's polygamous past. And for that matter, I mean, it came out in the news today. The news broke, and I think if this had been somebody in the Obama family, it would have been, you know, Drudge would have elevated it to the top, and it would have by now migrated to the top of the major network news that Matt Romney, one of Mitt's sons, went over to Russia to try to get some Russian money for his investment scheme, and in the process met with somebody close to Mr. Putin to say, don't take seriously my dad's trash-talking Russia. We'd like to have a good relationship with you if he becomes president. It's like, come on, give me a break. The Romney campaign and Romney himself and apparently his entire family will say or do anything to get power, money, or, you know, in this case, whatever they want, in this case, the White House. Maggie, thank you for the call. Say, I beg your pardon? Oh, you have the Romney clip. Play it. Okay, here it is.
Mount of Olives and splits the Mount of Olives and appears in Jerusalem. That's what the church says. And then over 1,000 years of the millennium, that the world is reigned in two places, Jerusalem and Missouri. That's what the church says. The second coming, the arrival of Jesus Christ, our church says, is in Jerusalem. That's the church doctrine.
The Stephanopoulos, misquoted.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. I'll have to listen to it at length. It's a 5-minute clip, Shano says. Dominic in Severn, Maryland. Hey, Dominic, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Back in 2007, Maryland quietly passed a law that the electoral vote would follow the national popular vote rather than the Maryland vote. So it really doesn't matter anymore.
Not true.
Well, Maryland vote.
No, right. Dominic, you're misunderstanding the law. That law in Maryland does not go into effect until the number of states who have passed a similar law. This is called the National Popular Vote. The website, I'm pretty sure it's nationalpopularvote.org. That law doesn't go into effect until enough states have passed a similar law that they represent 270 electoral votes. In other words, that they could actually elect a president. And so far, they have all been Democratic states. They've all been blue states. And when the red upside-down star states, the Republican states, you know, if President Obama wins in the Electoral College and doesn't win the majority of the national vote, that may get some Republicans on board with this thing and some of the Republican states on board with it, and we can just do away with the Electoral College by state-by-state initiative. So it's actually a good law, Dominic, but it does not mean that your vote doesn't count. Your vote absolutely counts. It's really important to show up and vote. Diane in Waterford, Michigan. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really concerned about the people that have been affected by this hurricane
right. And
the workers that have gone down to the disaster area. How are they going to vote?
I think that it's going to be a real tough one. I know this morning on NPR they were interviewing some people who were trying to get voting machines and power sources and things into areas that were lacking electricity, but it's going to be probably a fraction of them. This is going to be it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
More disenfranchised voters.
Yes. Yes. What the political consequences of that will be, though, I don't have a clue. But Diane, thanks for calling and raising the issue. It's an important one. Rob in Iron Mountain, isn't it, Minnesota?
MT period Iron. It's where, you know, like you got to say, it's not like Iron Mountain, Michigan.
Oh, it's Mountain Iron.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay. So what's up?
Anyway, it's where I gotta say, it's where you were talking about with age comes wisdom. There's this other thing out there. It's where I'm 59, and all the people I'm talking to are not voting for Romney. They're only voting against Obama. They really hate this guy that bad.
Yeah, there was an interesting point. In fact, let me find it very quickly because I thought this was how does race shape the vote? This is Ron Brownstein tweeting this. How does race shape the vote? In a New Jersey poll, whites who are uneasy with racial change back Romney 9-1. Whites who are okay with racial change back Obama 3-2. And the conclusion that is made by Marcos is, in other words, not all Republicans are racist, but almost all racists are Republicans. And this, of course, is, you know, something that was laid out by Richard Nixon. It was called the Southern Strategy. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Well, hey, Tom. You know, this Romney character, he from what I see here, he's trying to do political extortion here with the debt ceiling again.
Yes.
And, you know, this is reprehensible. I mean, last July, a year ago, the Dow and the markets just plunged tremendously and so much tumultuous, you know, over that.
Yeah, and either Moody's or S&P just came right out and said that they were downgrading the quality of the U.S. debt of treasuries because the Republicans were refusing to have a rational conversation. I mean, that's not their words verbatim, but they specifically called out the Republicans in Congress.
Exactly. And for, you know, the people of this country, you know, who have a median net worth approximately, $73,000?
No, 54.
Okay, 54, 40, I was 40, high.
45,
well,
I'm
yeah.
sorry.
I mean, wow, you people really have an awful lot of money. And, I mean, you're really voting, you know, in your best interests, you know, as we can see here in a race that's this close. It's exactly what you said. It's incomprehensible. I can't quite fathom this.
Yeah.
54 grand is nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's 45, but okay. But
when you've got a guy who wants to voucherize Medicare,
yeah,
and all these types of
privatized Social Security.
Yeah. You're going to get sick. When I was younger, you know, I thought I was invincible. And, you know, as age kept on, I've had a series of issues that I've had to deal with. And believe you me, you're going to get sick and you're going to need health care. Okay. And voucherizing something is not the way to go. That's the last thing when you get older that people are going to want to do.
Yep. Well said, Steve. Thanks a lot for the call. And, spot on. Although voucherizing it, you know, it's the Romney-Ryan campaign. It's the budget that virtually every Republican in the House of Representatives twice voted to voucherize Medicare. And I don't understand how these guys are getting reelected this year. It just blows my mind.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour on Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Shane Farnan, our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our phone screener, Danielle Gilday, to our writer-researcher Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager Ron Hartenbaum, all of the folks at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dow Global on commercial stations, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial stations, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, to Alan Ratner, Victoria Jones, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. It means a lot. Thank you very much. You're actually the one who makes this program possible, not just me. Faye in Cape Coral, Florida. Hey, Faye, what's up?
Hello. Hi, Tom. We love your show.
Thank you.
And we feel that President Obama is doing a great job in spite of little cooperation from the Republicans.
Yeah.
My question is, several friends of ours, and we've seen on the Internet, that there is going to be a 3.8% federal tax that is included in the Obamacare package. And we are a little concerned about this because that on top of what you would pay a realtor would really hurt
on the sale of your home
industry more.
Right.
And
if here's retiree. do you know the difference between capital gains and ordinary income?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so capital gains are, you know, like if you sell your home, if you sell an investment, that's capital gains tax. The capital gains are taxed at a maximum 15% income tax rate right now, and
right.
Whereas ordinary income is a maximum 36%. What Obamacare does is if you have a capital gain within 1 year that exceeds $250,000, which means if you sell your house and not the house is more than $250,000, but the profit on the sale of the house is more than $250,000, then instead of paying the 15%, you would pay 15% maximum income tax on that first $250,000 of profit, of capital gains profit. And everything above that, whether it's the sale of your house or whether it's the sale of stock, everything above that you would pay the additional whatever it is. I thought it was 1.3%. It might be 3 point whatever it is. It's a couple of points. And yes, that's there. But you have to have $250,000 in capital gains profit before that kicks in. So,
that sounds better.
Yeah, so it's like this is basically a tax that's going to hit millionaires who sell their mansions and show a big profit on it, period. Or people, you know, big major stock speculators who are, you know, it's going to raise the capital gains tax by 3 points after that first $250,000. It will not affect anybody in the middle class unless, you know, by coincidence you inherited a very, very expensive house and a long time ago and it has appreciated considerably and you sold it. And even then, it's going to take your capital gains tax up to, if your number is correct, a little over 18%, which is still far less than the ordinary income tax rate. So I don't have a problem with it.
Okay, that really explains it well.
Thank you. And all this information, I think it's healthcare.gov. We were sending people to this website once before. It's got the whole Obamacare, you know, everything that it does, all the provisions of the law, and you can get the details. I'm pretty sure it's healthcare.gov. Shane is going to check it out, and I'll let you know. But thank you for the call, Faye. I appreciate it. Jerry in Amityville, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. Yeah, I'd like to discuss Hurricane Sandy, but I'd like to discuss it in the context of the positive role that the government could play in helping people in this disaster. And that's why I think it's one of the biggest mistakes that Democratic politicians ever made was to avoid pushing back more on Ronald Reagan's foolish and famous comment that the scariest words in the English language are, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help.
Right.
I mean, after all, I think there's a lot of hurricane victims in New York and New Jersey, and there's flood and tornado victims at other times of the year that would love to hear those words.
Right. Mitt Romney says this should be privatized. Where is Bain Capital when you need them, right?
Yeah, well, but this is a whole ridiculous idea that everything is better privatized. You know, there's efforts underway that have been successful to privatize Medicaid in the state of Florida. All they need is a waiver from Kathleen Sebelius, and so far she's held off. She has some reservations about it.
Yeah.
But I'm very concerned that they might privatize Medicaid and give it to HMOs in Florida because I have a brother, sister-in-law, and an autistic nephew living in Florida.
That would be pretty scary. Jerry, thank you for the call. Yeah. It's always great to hear from you. And Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, got a minute
I'm
to the end of the, show.
Supreme
it's
Court.
Yours.
Yeah, okay. Glad you brought up the Supreme Court. I did a video about the argument called It's the 30-year effect of your vote. It's on YouTube. It's also on your website of the blogs.
Okay.
And it shows that what you're doing right now, if we have, like right now, we have several justices that are around from Reagan's administration, 26 years.
Right.
Yes, over a quarter century. So the effect of what voting for Obama right now could last beyond the year 2040.
Yes. And this is one of the reasons why the oligarchs are spending so much money to try and get Romney in, because they know the Supreme Court is the major thing that's at play here.
The Supreme Court is the thing. If you look at things such as Brown versus Board of Education and so forth, the Supreme Court has really been instrumental in changing society many times more than the Congress or the President. And
yes.
We really want to change things. Like, I'm not an Obama fan per se, but I have to vote for Obama in order to change the court, in order to help open up the system. Because if you look at a lot of the election laws, they run through the Supreme Court.
Yep. Citizens United basically struck down large swaths of McCain-Feingold, for example. Excellent point, Jeff. Thank you for the call, and thank you for listening to the program. Coming up Monday on the program, Election Day 2012 is almost here. We'll have a look at the key issues at stake, along with the latest from the campaign trail, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls. And don't forget, Hey, if you can early vote this weekend, do it. I'm going to. And democracy begins with you. Voting is important. Be sure to vote. But also, get involved. Show up. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.